Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, folks. Before we start today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast, I'd just like to remind you guys that you can check out my daily sports column. It's free by going to sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. You can just check out my Twitter to find the link there. Go check out chasethomaspodcast.com. There's a link on that page. But yeah, go check it out every day. New sports story in your email inbox. Yeah, go tell a friend, share it out, send it to anyone else you think would like the newsletter. But yes, every single day, go to sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Just Google Sports Renaissance Man, Chase Thomas, whatever you're most comfortable with, go do that. If you are an Apple Podcast listener, don't forget to leave this show a 5-star rating and a review. It's important to help the show continue to grow. And last thing, very quickly, but please email me at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com to get your mailbag question in, or any other questions that you might have about the show, about the column, anything like that. New mailbag columns go up every Friday. If you have any questions for the weekly shows that you would like us to answer on air, whether it's John Taylor on Wednesdays, Evan Swords on Mondays, the sports reporters on Fridays, make sure to get those questions in and we'll read them on the show, or I'll answer your questions in the mailbag on the newsletter. So go do that. Again, that's chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. Leave the show a 5-star rating and review. Follow on Apple Podcasts if you can. I think that's it. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to a Tuesday night edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am joined by Christopher Walden. Chris, good evening, sir. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. Good. Happy to be on again, man. How you been?
Not too bad. Not too bad. School, grad school starting back in a week and a half, so I'm not enthused about that. But, you know, football season's around the corner. We don't have long. Like, summer league's happening. Matt McClung's doing things with Lakers summer league, so he's back. And as someone who watches a lot of college basketball, too, that's good because that dude's a gunner and is an insane person. also here, Rashad Milligan. Rashad, good evening, sir. How are you?
Yo, what's up? It's my debut. On the great, you know, Peachtree alum, Chase Thomas. So I'm glad to be here, man.
Oh, you know. You remember those days.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know, you know. Hey, people talk, you know what I'm saying? I know about the legend, you know. I know he came up through the game and he went independent. No label, you know what I'm saying? We were just talking about the rap game before we recorded. Chase Thomas, independent, no label. Did it all without a deal. Come on, man.
Oh. Over there.
People are talking. I didn't know that. Well, we could talk off air about some stuff there too, because but technically not independent. I sold out. I am with Blue Wire now, so I'm not entirely independent. Yeah, people are going to hear some ads, and shout out to Indeed and all my ads before it. But thank you guys for being here. This is going to be a lot of fun because the NBA, like, we're going to get into stuff that's going to be outdated in like 25 minutes because the NBA is not sleeping, and Shams and Woj are just going back and forth, throwing haymakers on everything. But I want to start and kind of look, when you look at the winners and losers thus far, start with Rashad. Who stands out to you most as winning free agency thus far? Which team?
For sure. I think of Chicago. I mean, you know, a lot of people look at that roster and will be like, oh, that's still, you know, six seed. Like, so what? So what? And I'm like, you get one of those guys, you're like, okay. And then you get another one and you're like, And then you get another one, you're like, So they have a good starting five right now with Lonzo at the one. And then you have DeMar DeRozan. You have LaVine still. And Patrick Williams at the four. And then Vooch at the five. And then you have, coming off the bench, you have Caruso, and then Ayo, the guy they just drafted from Illinois, the hometown kid, who could be a steal. You know, like you said, you're a college basketball fan. You know how good Ayo is. So
yeah, Batman.
That, yeah, exactly, Batman. So that could be something. That could turn into something, especially in the East. And then you never know, because with these super teams, when you look at a Brooklyn, like you said, we're going to get to Los Angeles in a second, but when you look at Los Angeles and Brooklyn, a couple of those guys get hurt in the starting lineup, and you're like kind of looking to Blake Griffin and the likes of Carmelo and whoever the heck is 50 years old and used to be good 5 years ago, and you're like, can you turn back the clocks of time? And, you know, you can't depend on that, you know, if a couple of those guys go down. So that's why those teams in the middle of the pack, like you saw with Atlanta, like if a couple of those teams, you know, they get a top heavy and a couple of those guys get hurt, then things open up. And so I think a lot of those middle of the pack, quote unquote, teams are very important. That's why I think Chicago really won so far. They're a winner, a team that stands out.
Okay. Well, what about you?
I really like what the Miami Heat did, man. Mm-hmm. Bringing in Kyle Lowry. You get you a floor organizer, somebody who's just an adult when they're out on the floor with the team. You get to raise the ceiling a little bit more, putting them with Jimmy Butler. He got a big extension, so you got that locked in for the future. Combine them with Bam. They signed Markieff Morris today. You know, that's a good 4 or 5 that you can throw out on the court when you want to go smaller. You want to get some shooting out, space the floor a little bit. And, you know, the offseason, just making it here for the Heat. I know they got bounced early by the eventual NBA champions with the Bucks, but they desperately needed this time off to recover. The season was already short in form. They had a lot of, you know, COVID issues. And I really don't think they found their footing. But having this offseason, making these additions, I think the Heat really a real big winner free agency and going forward.
I agree. I think the Heat are, like, you didn't even mention P.J. Tucker, who I think is just is a steal for them. Like, they were missing Jay Crowder a lot last year, I think. And getting, he's not going to be as good as Jay Crowder, and Zach Lowe wrote a really good piece about this today on ESPN, but like, that is something that they were definitely missing in that Milwaukee series. And ironically enough, Milwaukee had PJ Tucker in that series. But I think Chicago is like a wait and see for me. Like, they have given up on the lottery, which is what they should do. It's kind of like the Magic, where they've been in Charlotte a little bit, where like things just, the balls just have not bounced their way. And they haven't got a lot of luck. Like, Kobe White's not a starter in this league. He's got too much Aaron Brooks-itis in him. And unfortunately, that's just not a long-term starter. And then you look around, you're like, Wendell Carter didn't work. Lauri Markkanen didn't work. But you did hit on Zach LaVine, who is shooting 8 threes a night, shooting almost a 40% clip, and carrying a high usage, getting better on defense, but like someone you can rely on with a high usage and to run a playoff offense. Then you have Patrick Williams, who looks like a guy who can defend all five positions. He's looking really good. I am high on Patrick Williams. But they did something smart, which is that, like, hey, we have the number one fan base by attendance every year. Like, Chicago's number one, huge market. Let's just be good for a couple years and bank on these good pieces. Like, if Vooch keeps playing well, if Zach LaVine keeps playing at an all-star level, if Lonzo really excels off ball, if this, that, and the other all work, then we can package these guys for somebody else to pair with LaVine, our star. Let's keep him happy. Let's keep these fans happy who have LaVine, who've been able to just enjoy what he's developed into on this team, and do right by him and see what happens. So, like, they are not building a contender, but what they are building is a stable group of veterans who know what they're doing around their star. And it's a star situation where they can't win a title, but it's a situation where they can be really good, and there's I don't see a scenario where they're not a playoff team. Does that make sense?
Right, for sure it makes sense. Well, who's the star? Did you see him trading, like, maybe Cat?
I don't know if the Minnesota's gonna do that anytime soon. Well, also Minnesota, like, I just was talking to Jack from Candace Hoopas, Jack Borman of Candace Hoopas, and we were talking about that a little bit, but like, Anthony Edwards being in the fold, I don't think they're going to hit the complete reset anytime soon, because Edwards really popped down the stretch there, and I just think they're going to go down.
I think he's out of there, man. I think he's out of there. You know, we're from Atlanta. Mm. We got some people. Ant is out of there in like 5-6 years.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's 5 to 6 years though. Like, that's, we get some time.
I know.
A lot can change then, man.
Also, he's objectively the funniest NBA player. Like, every interview with Anthony Edwards is one of the funniest things ever. Like, he is objectively hilarious. I will listen to any Anthony Edwards explainer for how good of a football player he was in high school whenever. Whenever Anthony Edwards baseball. Wants to talk what he can do. Like, he could sell me that he could be, like, the all-time best barista after a 30-second clip. I'm 100% certain he could do that.
Agreed.
He's a legend. I don't know, but... The Bulls, they're just a wait and see. Well, like, when you look at the Heat, do you think they're done? Do you think this is enough? And that betting on the health of Jimmy, Kyle, PJ Tucker not falling off a cliff, a year three bounce back for Tyler Hero, do you think there's just too much relying on an older core that needs to be healthy at the right time?
For me, I think you can always try to strike a balance with that. And for Chicago, the biggest thing is, like you said, is just showing LaVine you're serious and you're ready to contend. And you're willing to spend the money, you're willing to make the moves, whether that be, you know, now they did it, and in the future, you know, if they need to do something, because you never know when the next star going to be disgruntled, and now you got the contracts to play with and the flexibility. So you could just go out and do it. But I think it was important for them to do this now so they can, you know, at least be able to bring this to the table when it's time to try to re-sign LaVine back, especially with the comments he made the other day about, you know, wanting his respect and trying to get this new deal and whatnot.
Yeah.
For sure. I just wanted to say with Miami, yeah, I think this is definitely like kind of a last swing at it. Mm. I mean, well, you give Jimmy Butler the money you gave Jimmy Butler. Like, it's not a last swing. But, you know, like, hypothetically, you know, like, the way they went out last year wasn't pretty at all. And then, you know, you can obviously say, yeah, Butler, you know, the quick turnaround. Butler had COVID. He lost 80 pounds. Like, you can say all that, right? But it didn't look pretty at all. And then you bring in another guy. It didn't look pretty at all in Kyle Lowry, and you expect him to come fix it. And yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's just, and PJ Tucker, you know, how much longer? PJ Tucker doesn't look like the PJ Tucker he did a couple years ago already. Like, I mean, yes, he was a glue guy for a championship team a couple weeks ago. Much respect to him. But like you said, like, it's too much. All these guys got to be clicking. All these guys got to be healthy at the right time and play together long enough to get it going. You know, salute to Bam, and you know what I'm saying, and salute to Hero, the young guys and stuff, Duncan signing that money and stuff. But it's just like, bro, like you said, it's just they're banking on being healthy at the right time. And if you aren't, because you're old, you know, you're just looking at kind of what you had last season.
I mean, Lowry and Tucker are both on the wrong side of 35. Like, there is a very easy scenario, or plausible I should say, where this goes really bad really quick. Like, there is that distinct possibility, but I still think it's worth the gamble, because we really don't know when Jimmy's gonna give out. Like, Jimmy, he's like the most interesting star to me, because he doesn't shoot threes anymore. Like, he's just out. Like, he doesn't shoot threes at all, and he still affects games in every other way. And he's one of my favorite players, and I'm a big Jimmy Butler guy. But like, the Tibbs years, just the tread that he had in the bubble, what he's done to this point in his career, like, I don't know. Like, it could fall off really quick, because he doesn't have the shooting to fall back on. Like, everything else, like, everything comes from his motor. And if his motor starts to depreciate, that's a problem, because Kyle Lowry's motor is going to depreciate sooner rather than later, but he's an elite shooter, which is going to keep things afloat a little bit longer. But I don't know. I'm curious, but it's the kind of stuff that you should do. Rashad, do you think they gave Duncan a little bit too much? Or are you a little bit concerned about the years and money for him?
I mean, you know, you look at a guy like Jimmy, like you say, Jimmy doesn't shoot. Mm-hmm. He doesn't shoot anymore. So, you know, like, if it was one thing when Lowry first signed, and the rumors were out there that, you know, DeMar was going to team up with him for a reunion in Miami. Mm. And then, you know, I was talking to my boy Malik Brown about this, who's also at PSU right now. And he was saying, where's the spacing? Like, you have no one to space. So, I mean, like everybody was pretty much saying when Duncan got that money, like, be a star in your role. So you need some shooter. And, like, how many shooters are you going to find out there better than Duncan? You know, so it's not like they're just growing on trees. Even though a lot of dudes can shoot, like they can't play, you know, like you guys know, it's just a lot of steps to this, a lot of things. So I'm not too concerned about the money they gave them, because it's like, you need that. Yeah, you have a lot of your star players, a lot of your, you know, kind of key guys are slashers, or, you know, someone like a Bam, you know, who's face up mid range in. So you kind of needed someone who was going to shoot for you. And, you know, Hero is still a question mark. So, yeah.
Which is good, though, because Hero doesn't have to start anymore. He doesn't have to be a go-to. Like, the expectations for him, I think, though, just his role is going to be decreased, but I think that's probably better for him to just lose some pressure, because I think that probably weighed on him this year after the just kind of rookie year that he had. It took all of us by surprise, and then he took a step back because progress is not linear. And if he's coming off the bench, I think that's actually a plus for him. And they also got out of the Kendrick Nunn experience, which is also positive, I think.
Yeah. And it's something to, you know, having like a guy like Kyle Lowry in the locker room and on the floor.
Yeah.
I know sometimes it can be like cliche, and we can make a lot about people being like mentors and you seeing people every day and kind of picking up their habits. But, you know, it's a lot of weight to it too sometimes. And I think he's the perfect kind of buffer between, you know, him and Jimmy Butler, if not no rift that I know of between Tyler Hero and Jimmy Butler. But I know coming out the bubble and then going into the season, it's got to do something to his confidence when he look at how well he played and then, you know, him kind of going up and down last year. So I think somebody like Kyle Lowry would be big for his confidence and, you know, helping him get back to close to that level he was in the bubble and, you know, being able to be a weapon off the bench.
Well, thankfully he's got his Instagram account, so I think that should always keep his confidence.
And at Chipotle too, man. Mm-hmm. And Rolling Loud.
I was just thinking that. He'll always have his confidence, man. They just have to play the Jack Harlow song.
Mm, that is true. Like, that's never going anywhere. That guy can say that he got named after a song. That's when you really make it. When y'all hear, I'll probably say, let's do an over under 2 years. When you hear like the follow up to Cody and Crazy is just Chase Thomas. And we get that. That's when I know I'm like, okay, good. I'm Atlanta certified forever.
I was actually thinking about this with the names of people, and it was Mo Bamba, man. Like, because he performed it at Rolling Loud, and I was like, yo, this song is so awesome. Like, I forgot how awesome this song was. Like, this is a really good song. And I was just thinking about Mo listening to it and answering questions about having the song Mo Bamba or whatever for 3 years, and having Mo Bamba be so much bigger than Mo Bamba, the actual person. Yeah. But yeah, man, if Coding Crazy, if the follow-up to that is Chase Thomas, like, I mean, it works too, you know? Works too, Chase. You know why? Like, the obvious thing, you know? You rap about some drugs and Chase Thomas, you know, Atlanta certified, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it lines up. It's a very easy song.
I mean,
it's
the like pinnacle Canada for me Montana. Is getting permission from either Future or Migos or Young Thug to... Or honestly, it's actually... The one I would actually want to get most to get approved on this podcast to like use as an intro and outro, like to get permission to do, is the live concert that I went to, the last Outkast concert at Centennial Park that they ever did. I think it was At Last was what it was called. But if I got them to give me permission to have the B.O.B. opening as the opening, like just the cut from that live show.
Do you think Andre 3000 has the internet?
Well, I know Big Boy does.
Big Boy for sure.
Big Boy is a big internet guy.
You could tweet at him literally on the timeline. Hey, Big Boy, like, I have this podcast. Or I'm from China, you know? Like, Big Boy would do it. I don't know if Andre 3000.
Andre's off the grid.
Yeah, he has the internet.
It's a good life. I don't blame him. That man's got his priorities in check. I don't hate it. But yeah, that's the dream. That's when you guys hear that, you'll be like, oh, okay, Chase is good now. Chase is good. It is good. But I do love explaining to people where it's like, oh, where's Migos from? And I'm like, well, they went to high school like 2 minutes from me. And like Berkmar, and he was like quarterback. And it's like, anyway, the Warriors added Otto Porter. They added Bielica. I'm never going to pronounce that name right. From the Kings. It looks like Andre Iguodala's back, probably coming back. And then they drafted Kuminga and Moses Moody in the lottery. They are trying to do something that is extremely difficult for teams to do, which is oscillate between contention and rebuilding. And they kept Wiseman. They kept that pick. They have Kuminga now. They have Juan Toscano-Anderson. They have a backup point guard situation that is still very unsettled, and not a big fan of Mulder or anybody behind Steph. But like, we are like Steph, and we, I don't know what we're going to get from Clay. And Bob Myers even said, like, we're contenders if Clay is what he was 2 years ago. If he's not, then we're not. And then Draymond, like, Draymond can fall off a cliff any year. It's just because of the way he plays. I think they're so fascinating because Vegas loves them. I think they have the third highest title odds going into next year. I have no idea what to make of
the Warriors.
Like, yeah, the Warriors do.
The Warriors have the third. Stop it.
Yes. I mean, before free agency, they did.
Hey.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. But continue, Chase. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, that's
stimulus
what I'm
package, man.
But that's what I'm saying. They're so. I don't know what to make of this group. But like, do you like the decision to keep both those lottery picks? Do you like their free agent signings thus far?
With what I mean, with the little that they have. I mean, you can't be mad at it. Otto Porter, that's a good gamble. If he's healthy, that's, you know, you always can use a good wing that can hit threes and defend a little. You always can do that. Bijelinka, he's a little bit on the older side, but he got a little size, 6'10". He can step out. He can, you know, shoot a little bit. Underrated playmaker, too. He's not going to be like a run your offense through him kind of guy as far as handling the ball in the half court. But, you know, he can find some people cutting, you know, when you put him on the block or the way the Warriors run, like their movement offense, he can come in and add a little oil to the hinges, man. I like the two they brought in, and then they just get Andre back. I think that'll just be a cool story. And we all get to enjoy that and watch him, you know, go out and ride to the sunset, man, with his old crew.
I want Patty to end up there. Like, Patty's got an interest from them, the Nets and the Lakers, but like, the Lakers just signed Nunn, so like, I don't think they'll do it.
Yeah, I think Patty signed with
Patty. Yeah.
Oh, did
with
he?
Nets. Yeah, oh, 2 years for 12, yeah. I think.
I was kind of surprised because I don't know how that works. Like, during the Olympics, like, are you up all night on the phone, like, with your agent while you're talking? I was right. Wondering. I was like,
I was running that too.
Like, you running everything by Levine. You're like, hey, DeRozan, good? No, we kind of need to know.
But the Warriors, for the Warriors. Yeah, Chase, to go back to your question, two top 15 picks and a great draft. On paper, that sounds like, okay, great. Steph Curry is old. He's getting old. Klay Thompson is coming off of two knee surgeries and season-ending, you know, injuries and
Achilles,
stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, is that, or Achilles, excuse me. So, you know, and Draymond is, you know, he's kind of gotten off of the excuse of his impact is beyond the stat sheet for the last 5 years. So it's like, okay, like, what is this team? What can this team do? You don't know. And you would think, okay, all right, this is the perfect time to package those two picks, you know, to get some help in. But then you think about it and you're like, who is on the market? They're all backcourt guys. So it's Damian Lillard. You have Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal. All three of those, you know, there is no one on the market really notable who is in the front court. So it's like, who are you going to get to bring over help for Golden State with those two picks? So, I mean,
I think that's why Pascal was popping up on their radar a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Pascal. Yeah, that would have been great.
I don't know if that moves them enough. Like, I don't think any of those moves, like, propel them to the top of the West.
I think it does more than, you know, 19-year-old Jonathan Kuminga and 20-year-old Moses Moody, you know, so.
Yeah, I agree. I think for them, they get to actually field NBA players on the court. No disrespect to, you know, the Motors of the world and a lot of the guys that they brought up through the G League. Just having Clay there, I don't know what Clay got left, but like I said, just getting guys on the court is going to help them out. I mean, we've seen what they did last year. I don't know about – I'm with you, Chase. I don't know about contention until I see it, but they'll definitely be in the hunt as far as that 5, 6, 7, 8 range.
But when we say that, who's falling? Year? Who's falling to the top of the West next year? The LA teams like Denver. Where's Denver going? Like, where is Utah going? I just don't know the Phoenix, for that matter. Like, who's falling in this group?
Portland.
I mean, Portland, yeah.
Mm.
But that's
it. If you trade CJ and Dane, I mean, which could, you know, very possible, you know. Well, I don't see them trading. But at least CJ, you know. It's kind of like in the East with Philly. You know, they trade Ben and blow it all up, you know.
They're not blowing it up, though. Because, like, if you're trading Ben, I don't – like, you're trading for someone who can help Embiid win a title in the next 2 years. Because, like, Embiid is – I love Joel Embiid, but, like, that dude is not going to be an MVP-type player 5 years from now. Like, the injury – like, at some point, these knee injuries and everything else and the foot stuff and all, it has to – like, it has to end things quickly. Like, I don't want that to be the case, but, like, if you're betting on Joel Embiid still being an MVP-type player in this league 3 years from now, that's not me. Like, I'm out. Like, this is, like, he is at an unreal level right now. We saw he was a little bit different in the postseason. Talked to Coach Thorpe about that from ESPN last week, and he was like, no, he was not right. Like, Joel Embiid was not right. Like, that is going to be a common theme until it's not right and it's staying not right. So I would do like their decision not to flip for James Harden last year really, really bit them, because I think Harden and Bede, I don't even know what you do with the pick and pop there. Like, I don't know how you really stop them at least. Like, that was the move.
Fumbled the bag.
They did.
Yeah, big time.
Because I don't know what they can do. It's Lillard. And I don't know if Portland should, if they get offered picks and Simmons for Lillard, I would take it, because Simmons would actually be great in Portland and get away from everything, just do a free flowing offense. I would like him in Portland.
Use it. Yeah, I would like that.
But I don't think any of those things are going to happen.
Memphis can ball out.
Oh, also Memphis, it's interesting you say them, because I think the other idea was Jaren Jackson. Like flipping Wiseman for Jackson, where Wiseman fits there. That was something I was wondering.
I like that.
Jackson's ready to win now. And you throw him in, and like, there's some question about the injury stuff, but like Jackson and Draymond, oof. Pick and pop with Jackson and Steph.
Yeah, I like that.
And then Wiseman can take his time in Memphis.
If we say Ben destination, did I hear something related to a Ben destination?
Oh, yeah, Portland, yeah.
I would love if Atlanta could get in on them talks, man.
Oh, that's not happening.
But it ain't. But no. They got some decent assets. They just don't have I don't think they have the big contract that Philly would want. Maybe if they went ahead.
Well, they do now. And, Trae Young.
Yeah, Trae Young. Yeah. Or if they went ahead and gave, you know, John Collins his money, and maybe
I think they're going to give him his money too.
Guys, yeah. It's a lot, but I would love for them to get into the talks. I don't expect Ben Simmons or Dane to be moved until either trade their line or next year, though.
Yeah. I don't know. Simmons, it's just value could not be any lower. Like, that's the unfortunate part. But, like, Simmons, we've talked ad nauseum about him, where it's just like, if he had an average shot, he's a top three player in basketball. And someone made this point, I forgot who it was a few weeks back, but it was like, even if he never shoots anything, like, he's a Hall of Famer. Like, with everything else that he does defensively and changes games and his pace of play, his passing, his elite passing, his elite vision, his elite defense, like, that dude, if he continues on this trajectory with what he's scoring and what everything else, then he's probably a Hall of Fame player. And we're just really upset, because it's like, if that dude was an average shooter, he is a game changer and he's untouchable.
That was the expectation coming out of school.
Yeah.
That's why he's a number one pick.
Yeah.
Which I agreed with. Like, he's worth the gamble. It's just seems all mental, which is why I would just be so hesitant to move on from him, because if he gets over the mental stuff, then, I mean, you have a MVP. Like, I just, it would scare me. I imagine Daryl Morey and Doc and Rince terrified of moving him, because if he goes somewhere else and becomes mini LeBron, then you're like, oh God, what have we done? And you don't want to be that team.
But speaking of Philly, though, you know, we were talking about the guys who are on the market. this doesn't really, you know, help Golden State, but it was another guy on the market, Tobias Harris.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Who's trading for Tobias though? Who was he moving the needle for?
No one. Yeah, I think he's proved that in his last couple stops. It's like the teams are exact same, and he just keeps getting his 20.
He just fades. Like, he's someone who will get 12 in the first quarter, and then 0 in the second, and then he'll have 8 in the third and 2 in the fourth, and people just see 22, 8, and 8, and he's solid. It's like, well, no, that man, no. And I like Tobias, but if he's like your fourth guy, he's just then that Harrison Barnes, Wiggins type thing, where it's a lot of empty calories. And what he was doing in Los Angeles a couple years ago was the best version we saw of him, where he was doing that high pick and roll and was like lead ball handler as a point forward. But we haven't seen that ever since. So I don't know. I'm pretty out on that. But if you tell me like Portland just adds him because they just need to keep at, like, they just need to throw money at dudes, like more guys who can help ease the burden for Lillard, because they're just not doing anything. They're doing nothing. Norman Powell is not enough to keep them happy. But are we in agreement? I have a question. Are we in agreement that the Spurs are having the worst offseason of any NBA team right now?
I don't know what they're doing. I mean, I guess they just grabbing guys just to try to see what they can do with them. But, you know, with the small assets they have, with Dejounte Murray and Derek White, I think they could have made a little bit more shake than what they did. And then they had DeRozan, too, which I think that was it did turn into a sign and trade. But I feel like they could have got more for the future. But to me, it feels like they're just trying to transition Pop out. And, you know, whether Becky Hammon replace him or not, whomever's there, just get used to kind of, you know, they don't seem to want a full out rebuild. So, I mean, this is what they got. What,
they don't
McDermott?
Have a choice. Their team stinks.
you got a choice. Yeah.
Like, Yaki
for
Pirtle
a while now.
At the four, who's starting? Zach Collins? Are they starting Pirtle and Collins? The 4-5?
Yeah. Yep.
Is Trey Jones backing up DeJounte Murray now? Lonnie Walker ever going to do anything? This team's awful.
He cut his hair.
Yeah. Oh, my God. This Spurs team, like, they're an organization now where they've got the benefit of the doubt way too long, and the Pats might be nearing this with Belichick and everything going on in New England right now, where it's like, if you just remove Pop and you remove the history of the Spurs and you just purely look at their moves and how they've drafted and what they've done over the last 5 years, you would go, oh, this organization's not good. Like, they're the Orlando Magic. But because of the history, you're like, oh. They got a plan. They'll develop him. The Derek White, he'll be a thing. DeJounte Murray, he's going to be great. Keldon Johnson, awesome. Can't wait. Devin Vassell,
Olympian,
young Kawhi.
Olympian Keldon Johnson.
They're going to be one of the worst teams in the NBA next year. I don't see how they're not. Like, look around. Like, it sounds crazy to think, but I'm like, who in the West is going to be worse? Portland still, like, even if they fall. Houston got a lot better. Houston, I think, will be okay if John Wall's healthy. Like, I like that group with Christian Wood, Wall, Jalen Green, those guys. Like, I don't hate that. Shea just got paid. OKC, I think, will be better. Sacramento is old. They're one of the older teams in the West. The Pelicans might be better. The Grizz are better. The Timberwolves should be better. The Spurs have a real chance of being a bottom three team in the NBA next year.
New Orleans can make a good case of being worse than them next year.
I mean, but Zion, like, the upside of Zion and Brandon Ingram, like, that's just, there's no excuse for them to be worse than the Spurs next year. Like, that's, David Griffin's got to go if that's the case.
New Orleans has surprised me in the last couple of years of how underwhelming they've been.
Well, let's talk about New Orleans, because they have been active too. Like, Devontae Graham out of nowhere. Like, it seemed like every report you read from Charlotte people was Devontae Graham, they picked up his qualifying offer, so he was staying in Charlotte, and that... who am I blanking on? The guy who ended up, they were moving on from. Why am I blanking on who it was? Not LaMelo, not Rozier. Who am I blanking was going to? Oh, Malik Monk. But they did not pick up his. So he had to go. And, you know, then they're like, no, we're actually going to sign and trade him away. And you look at the Pelicans and you're like, I don't know what they're fixing here. What are we doing? Like, I don't know. They're just mixing and matching bad fits, it seems like. And Lonzo, I would just, I don't know, man. I do not like what David Griffin's doing again. Sorry, David. Yeah. I know you follow me, so I apologize. But maybe it's a long-term plan. But like, I don't see it. This just feels more of like, I don't know how they're better.
I want to know what something had to go down for. They made it clear last year that they were not going to, you know, go forward with Lonzo Ball.
Mm.
And I don't know what it was, but it was sudden and it was surprising to me. And I feel like they probably could have got more for him last year at the trade deadline, rather than what they got. No disrespect to Devontae Graham. I love his story. But with Zion's people putting that heat on them, man, they went backwards. They were one of my losers in free agency too. And then, you know, they still got Josh Hart just kind of waiting in the wind. So we don't really know what's happening with them. So,
well, he's podcasting.
I don't know if it's a good thing when you start to, you know, describing a basketball player with, I love his story, but.
I'm just saying, like, yeah. You know, for they went from getting into the Kyle Lowry sweepstakes to this. So
I don't think they're ever in the Kyle Lowry sweepstakes. I think that's one of those things where they put out like where
that was leverage.
Yes.
Yeah, that was leverage.
And they to make got, Zion and Ingram played. Happy. We're like, hey, we're Zion.
That's right, yeah. But I mean, well, Miami is a stronger organization and they're a lot closer to a title than them. But I was gonna say if 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Twice on Sunday.
Exactly. I mean, there's the Saints, which you don't want to go anywhere near that. You don't want to go anywhere near LSU. You don't want to go anywhere near the New Orleans Saints. Like
South Beach all day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
man,
so are the Pelicans having a worse offseason than the Spurs?
No, because it's like, I think I like Satoransky. I like Garrett Temple. I didn't hate their draft. I like Jonas. I think Jonas is actually a better fit next to Zion than Steven Adams was. But, like, it's just not enough to calm a lot of nerves with Ingram and Zion. And we already got pressure from Zion's family. Like, this is not enough. And, like, there was some weird stuff. And the reason that Stan got fired in the first place was that, like, he was too negative. And players tuned him out. And Zion was like, nah, man. These young guys were like, we're not doing this. So it didn't work, and they were just historically bad defensively, and that's a Stan coach team. So they went, I think, 31-41. They were 10 games under 500 last year, but healthy Zion and a healthy Ingram, like, they should be in that 7-8 range. Like, they should be in the Memphis-Dallas range. Because Ingram is that good, and Zion should be that much better next year. Like, coach last week was like, if you watch the film, Zion could be an MVP candidate next year. Like, that's how close he is already. So it's like, it's hard for me to disparage them too much, but then again, they lucked into Zion. So it's not like they did a whole lot. It's like, oh yeah, you took Zion Williamson. Congratulations. way to go. That was a tough one. No, I don't know. They're not having a worse offseason than the Spurs, because the Spurs, I think it's just, there's no reason for optimism with what they're doing. Like, I don't even know what's the point of Doug McDermott. What is the point of throwing shit at the wall with Zach Collins? Like, What is the point of any of this?
John Collins? ?
I don't think Collins even wants that. Like, that's a sad situation for him. And then he's going back to number one option life. Like, he just learned he's the fourth option. Like, that is something I talk with friends about, where I'm like, I am so curious, because Collins had to become a fourth and fifth option for them to succeed in the playoffs. And that was a huge thing for him to get over and accept. Does he accept that if he becomes the second highest paid player on this team? Or does he reassert his role where he's like, no, y'all are paying me this, so I am actually this again? Or is Trey like, hey, we've already had this back and forth, I don't need to go to Chris Kirshner again in the Athletic, and we need to I don't have to do that, but like, this is not going to happen. You're gonna be in the corner, we're gonna run the Spain pick and roll, pick and drag, and that's all you're doing. That's it.
Nah, Collins is going to be the same guy after the money, because
I hope so.
I mean, he was playing the way he was, like you said, accepting that role as the fourth, fifth option on the court. You know, when they were winning, because, you know, and he said it. You remember when he was like, at the end of the season, yeah, I could have put up more points and stuff like that, but I had to sacrifice that for winning, you know, for the team winning and stuff like that. And he was doing that with money on the line. So, you know, I think once he gets that money, I don't think he's going to change. You know, that's just kind of his personality.
I hope so. What do you make of the Lou two-year thing? Because I was like, oh, I'm out immediately. Like, anything after one, I'm like, goodbye. Like, you're back. Like, you're a role. I'm not signing up for a guy who's contemplating retirement and looked awful before he got to Atlanta. Like, no. I understand that, like, finding a backup point guard has been a huge problem during the Trae Young era. But, like, no, I'm not giving a multi-year deal to a backup guard. No, we can just have Herter. Like, that is the thing, is like, Herter can just be the backup point. Like, that he is at the point now where he can be the secondary playmaker with and lead the second unit. Like, we don't need that anymore.
Yeah, it's gonna be
I think they still need it. I don't think Herter and Cam, I don't think they're enough. Like they tried, the Hawks have tried that, and they just, it's,
well, we saw
it.
Another,
that's
level of Herter. We Herter, oh, yeah, to another level,
yeah,
this year.
For sure. Salute to Herter. Great. But I'm looking at that Knicks series, man. When Trey goes out,
yeah,
and it just looks like Hawks don't know how to play basketball. And a lot of games when Trey was out in the playoffs, and John Collins looked like he didn't know what to do on offense without Trae Young spoon feeding him the ball. They need it, man. They need it, man. The difference that Lou made when he played well those 2-3 games in the playoffs, it just made a world of difference.
Oh, I don't disagree. I don't disagree at all.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I don't think Kevin Herter is the guy.
Well, what I'm saying is, like, would you rather have Rose for one or Lou for two?
For sure.
Yeah, you know what Rose brings to the table. He still got a lot left, man. Lou will be on the other side of 30 now, and you don't want to see what happened once he hits 36, and especially if you plan on, you know, contending and going deep into the playoffs. That's I don't know.
I think we should have given another year for Chris Dunn. He was close to really breaking through with this Hawks. he was close. Matthew Dellavedova, still a free agent. The legend, 31 years old. 31.
How is he only 31?
Hey, man, what they call them, the lost mixtape years, man. When you get that bag after you come off of competing, or you had that one good year, and we never see you again.
Man,
until you pop back up.
Let's wrap with our favorite extensions and our least favorite extensions. Walt, who's your favorite? When you look at the numbers and the years, who did you like the most, and which contract did you like the least?
I love Steph Curry's extension because I think he's going to age gracefully. It was well-deserved last year. You know, not that the front office and Steve Kerr didn't believe in him, but they didn't think that he could come out, perform at, you know, the level that he performed when he won his MVPs, and he did that and then some. I love that deal. You got to lock in your stars and give them that thank you. The extension that I did not like, man, that Jimmy Butler extension is tough. I understand it from Miami's point of view, but, you know, like we talked about, the durability and the style of play that Jimmy brings to the table, extremely risky, man. And, you know, you couple that with Kyle Lowry, it could be a great next year, 2 years for the Heat. But, you know, as we seen last year with all of these injuries and wear and tear, man, it can be an awful 2 or 3 years for the Heat. And then, you know, they're kind of stuck with damaged goods. But we'll see. Pat Riley always make a way, but I'm a little weary about that extension. What about y'all?
Love the Trae Young extension. First Hawk to get a max since Chase knows what that is.
Oh my god.
first max extension for Atlanta Hawk in 11 years. Deserved every single penny, man. I'm, you know, just they said he wouldn't be in the league in 5 years. I remember all of your tweets. But
No.
I was talking to
the. Oh, okay. I mean, I was someone who was pounding the Luka for Trey stuff.
If I knew that, Chase, I would have opened up with that. Like, oh, you know, you were wrong about Trey. How you doing? I'm doing great tonight. But
some men just want to watch the world burn.
I will say, from a narrative perspective, my favorites were Trey and Steph. for, you know, Steph, you know, with the rumblings of him, oh, could he go to the Lakers? I'm like, don't do that. That's so whack, bro. You have three rings. There's no reason for you to do that. But I guess from kind of the actual thing, it's half worse extension slash hash best, because it's like the best value, but like the dudes got ripped off. Bobby Portis and Cameron Payne for sure. You know, two guys who were key contributors to two finals teams, and you know, Milwaukee loves Bobby. You know, we heard about it 10 times during every broadcast in the finals, and Cameron Payne just had an amazing playoff run. And but for them, it's really bad for them because they got ripped off. So it was a great bargain for them and stuff. But yeah, at the same time, it was really bad. So those are my best and worst. I guess if you say anything, not to come off as a hater, because it's his final bag of, you know, his life, like the largest kind of contract he'll ever sign, is Chris Paul being 40 years old and getting paid what he's going to be getting paid. Kind of sucks, but, you know.
Also, negotiating with the president of the Players Association has to suck too.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I might have a hunch that it probably does. So, but yeah, I'll say those are the worst and my favorite contracts. Extensions.
Also, shout out to friend of the pod Trayvon Edwards of The Athletic, who mentioned haphazardly on the Athletic NBA show, like I think it was last week, where he was just like, because people were reporting that DeMar might take a discount to go back home, and he was like, nah, he's getting the back. He's not taking this guy. He's living in LA. He's going to get paid somewhere else and keep living in LA. Like he's not taking a discount. And that man got another multi-year extension to go to Chicago and bear those Chicago winners. For me, the best contract is Mike Conley back to Utah, because Utah is a taxpayer team and they are going to have a big tax bill. They paid Gobert. They have Mitchell. They just paid Conley. He's going to make a lot of money, and he's 33 years old, but his pick and roll work with Gobert was critical to them. Like, this team lives and dies by Conley's health. And I think there is a real plausible scenario, if he doesn't get hurt and he doesn't deal with his issues, that they're in the finals this year. There's no reason to believe that they should not be a finals team next year in terms of like, can they get there? But they could not have gotten there without re-signing Conley. And they had no, it's like if he leaves, it's one of those situations where it's like there's no alternative. You're still capped out, so you can't do anything else. Like, you're just going to replace him with Jordan Clarkson. I really like that deal. I also like Spencer Dinwiddie in Washington. I think he'll be really, really good next to Beal, and he's just such a good off-the-ball shooter anyway, an off-the-ball player, that Beal will have a higher usage. He'll enjoy it more. I like what DC has done. Are we sure Dennis Schroeder gets signed? Can we for sure say he is not an Atlanta Hawk and backing up Trae Young next year? Who's to say?
he's going somewhere. I think that's the question. Is like when you said, is Dennis Schroeder getting signed? Is he getting signed? Period. I think he's gonna get. I hope so. It's looking kind of sketchy when Kent Bazemore goes back to the Lakers before you do. It ain't looking so good for you around the league, my man. But. I think someone's going to pick him up.
I think the worst deal, though, for me, I just can't shake the worst deal being... I'm with you on Chris Paul. I don't think this deal looks good at all 2 years from now. Like, 40 years old for a small point guard, 39 years old, that's just a lot of money that they can now not use to add another star next to Booker. And we'll see what Ayton does when he gets an expanded role, and he did a great job acquiescing, but I'm scared of that one. And then Jared Allen. It's a lot of money for a rim running center. That is a lot of money for a rim running center.
How many games has Jared Allen won the Cleveland Cavaliers since he's been traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers? That's what I wanted to know, man. How many games has Jared Allen won for you? I'm calling my section. I'm looking like, oh, okay. Maybe Isaac Okoro, he proves himself another year. Oh, okay, all right. Jared Allen, he's a great talent. We've known he's a great talent since he's been in the league. That much money? How many games did y'all win last year? Come on, dog.
Out on him. Brutal. He's fine. He's just someone I don't want to pay. Like, he's just someone I don't want to pay, but if he's there, then it's fine. Well, let's end it there, guys. This was great. I appreciate you both making the time. What can we look out from you across the internet this week, Rashad?
I don't know, man. Whatever. With my name on it. Yeah, you guys can check it out.
There you go. I've never heard of a plug like that. I like it. Just wherever my name's at, that's what you should check out. Walt, what about you, man?
I like what Rashad said, man. Whatever my name gets attached to, just check it out. But of course, LakersOutsiders.com. I just got moved and settled in, man. So I'm gonna start back recording soon. So as soon as that happens, I'll be shooting some links out and whatnot. And you know, you can follow me on Twitter at Hoop A Fiasco. And yeah, man, thank you for bringing me on, Chase. Nice to meet you, Rashad.
Oh, likewise. Like, and Chase, but before we get off the air, I want to make sure this is on the record. I want to get back on to just talk, like, on a geeky level about the Hawks. So,
okay,
keep that in mind.
Well, you know, I'm down. I'm always here to talk about why Cam Reddish is the most important Hawk to their future of the next 5 years. I'm always ready for that conversation.
All right, Chase. Sounds good. I'm going to hold you to it. It's on the air now.
I mean, it's right there. Like, I literally almost passed out when he hit multiple threes in a playoff game. Like, I just had a seizure in my living room. Like, it was one of the greatest things. So yeah, we can do that. Absolutely. And also just talking basketball. This is great. Guys, we will reconvene at a later date, but thank you so much for making the time. I will talk to you both soon.
Hey, appreciate y'all.
All right, the Tuesday edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast rolls along as I am now joined by Jack Borman to talk all things Minnesota Timberwolves, because I'm really interested in Minnesota Timberwolves. Jack, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm great, man. How are you doing?
I am doing pretty, pretty good. How are you? How are you feeling? Like, are you overwhelmed with just the amount of NBA things that are happening at the moment?
Man, I wish I could be. I mean, I've just been so focused on kind of where the Timberwolves go at this inflection point, kind of in the franchise, and kind of and just in terms of Gerson Rose's tenure. I mean, it's been really up and down, especially with how they've been with injuries, and just looking at things through a Timberwolves lens. I've just been waiting for things to happen, but yeah, looking around the league, man. I mean, if I were a Bulls fan or a Knicks fan, or a Pelicans fan even too, I'd just be really overwhelmed with just things flying around left and right, and just how fast those franchises are changing within a matter of hours.
Yeah, I mean, every deal, I shouldn't say every deal, so many of these deals are just like, oh, I would have liked that at one or two, I would have liked that one with a team option, I would have liked that at like everything four. I'm just like, oh no. I don't know, like, are you doing the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny now because you see so many contracts now that got signed last season that have already become these terrible deals. We saw the Pistons already have to salary dump Mason Plumlee. We saw the Jazz salary dump Derek Favors. And I'm looking at some of these deals like, man, these teams are just spending money to spend money. You know, Nerlens Noel at $11 million a year, Evan Fournier at almost $20 million a year. I mean, it's just crazy how much money is being thrown around by some of these teams.
Yeah, it's wild, but you know, it's what we, I guess, kind of expected with this off season and what the truncated off season last year looked like, and there's just a lot more player movement. I guess it's just a lot more minor pieces that have been around, and it is interesting because the Timberwolves, like, when you look at what you saw with Finch down the stretch last year, and you saw the progression of Anthony Edwards, you see where Towns is when he came back, and D'Lo being more of a bench guy, and then you traded Rubio. There's a lot there, but when you plan out this core, like how to add pieces around this core, do you look kind of to the Hawks and what they did with Gallinari and Bogey, or what do you make of how they should approach this offseason?
I think of it kind of like the Bucks last year. You know, where the Bucks had kind of been stuck in this middle ground of, you know, we're a really good team, but we're definitely just not there yet. And we just kind of need to, you know, say screw it and kind of make that jump and take that leap of faith. And with the Timberwolves right now, I think they're looking at the West and you know, the Lakers were fractured before they made their moves. But you look at teams like the Clippers, the Nuggets, both those teams are both going to be worse. Portland is on the verge of implosion. The Spurs are going to be horrible. The Grizzlies are going to be worse. You know, and you think, you start to think about that. There's an opening for the Timberwolves to really become a firm playoff team in the Western Conference if they take that leap of faith. And for the Timberwolves, that seems like Ben Simmons. And you know, the Timberwolves have been awfully quiet. They've the only two things they've done in free agency, you know, thus far are give those qualifying offers to McLaughlin and Vanderbilt, and then we signed Nathan Knight to a two-way deal. You know, they've been really quiet, and I think that they're really trying to trade. Gerson Rosas, the president of basketball operations, has said that really the only vehicle for improvement for this team is through trading. And so when you think about that, I just think that it's really tough to make moves on the margins via trade as a small market team that are really going to make you that much better. Like in a vacuum, do I think that Taurean Prince fits better than Ricky Rubio on this team? Yeah, I do. But I don't think that that's going to be the difference of three or four wins or enough to really swing your roster to a point where you can get into the playoffs after, you know, being a bottom of the barrel team for the last few years. So, you know, I think the Timberwolves, if you're in a position where you can get three legitimate star players on one team in a small market, I think that that's something you really, really got to think about. And for the Timberwolves, it's just a matter of if you're willing to pay the price to get a guy like Ben Simmons. But given just the star power that he possesses and how much better he'd make your team on both ends of the floor from day one, you know, for me, that's where I'd be thinking.
What do you think is the most realistic situation? That's kind of like the outline of what makes sense to you. What do you think is the realistic expectation for Timberwolves fans?
In terms of the most realistic outcome, I think you'd probably be looking at something like a sign and trade for Lauri Markkanen. You know, a guy that Timberwolves drafted before they traded to Chicago in the Jimmy Butler deal along with Zach LaVine. You know, he's got to construct the floor, and the Timberwolves really need help at the four spot. And Rosas has said it over and over again this summer that, you know, he's not just looking, you know, solely at a four guy. He could be looking at a five guy too that could slide in above Towns and push Towns down to the four, which I think would be really interesting because Towns defends better in space. And so if you're looking at a true rim protector, then maybe that's Miles Turner and you're willing to give up some pieces for him. But the Timberwolves aren't really a realistic one-to-one trade, you know, partner with the Pacers given the construction of both the rosters. So, yeah, in terms of most realistic, I'd say something like Lauri Markkanen and then re-signing Jared Vanderbilt and Jordan McLaughlin. So pretty much just running it back with swapping out Rubio for Prince and then you know, and then picking up a guy like Lauri Markkanen and potentially sending out Jared Culver and or Juancho Hernangómez along the way.
Do they have the salary to the space to throw a massive offer sheet at John Collins?
No. So okay. What would have to happen is I think that in lieu of throwing a huge offer sheet at Collins, I think that they'd have to talk to the Hawks, and the Hawks would have to know, okay, you know, we're not going to, you know, let's say the Hawks have a walkaway number. Let's say it's $30 million a year, and the Timberwolves are willing to pay that $30 million a year. I think you'd see a sign and trade agreed to before, you know, before you'd see, oh, the Timberwolves have signed him to an offer sheet because they just don't have the cap space to sign him to that outright.
Interesting. Well, that's good to know.
And I guess what works in the Timberwolves' favor is that because Collins's raise would be so significant, you'd have base year compensation working in your favor. Mm-hmm. So where Collins's salary figure in a trade would be half of what his actual salary cap hit is. So if he signs a deal for $30 million a year, you would only have to theoretically send out you know, a salary match of you know, of whatever that 15 would be then divided by, you know, 1.75 to get that 175% number for salary match and assign and trades. So you don't really have to send out Malik Beasley, or you could send out you know, just a ton of picks and guys to match salaries, but yeah, I think that the sign and trade would be the only vehicle really for Collins.
Did you like the Rubio trade by and large?
I did. I love Ricky Rubio as a dude. He was an awesome mentor this year for Anthony Edwards. And he really played better the last, 15, 20 games of the season. But he just shot the ball too poorly and took a lot of really ill-advised shots, which is something that was unlike Ricky Rubio. And just missed a lot of open reads, really. And getting guys the ball when they were open was something that took him a while to really get in the flow of this season, which is odd considering that's really what he's been excellent at his whole entire career. He was still excellent at taking care of the ball. He had an assist to turnover ratio close to 4 this year, which is great. But it just didn't really fit on the roster. The Timberwolves need as much shooting as they can get. Rubio just isn't that. And I think with Taurean Prince, he gives you added size on the wing, which is something that the Timberwolves need, considering that you look at guys like Josh Okogie and Malik Beasley, Jalen Noel, just other guys that are going to be on the wing this year that are only 6'4", or 6'5". So getting a guy like 6'8" that can play the 3, coming off the bench, I think will be big. But I'm not entirely sure that Taurean Prince will be on the roster day one of next season.
So when you think about what we saw from Edwards down the stretch last year, and you think about Towns' game and him just being what he is at this point, by and large, just a really, really elite player, what is the right kind of mix and type of players around Towns and Edwards? Not necessarily players themselves, but like the right kind of long-term fits, because it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like it's not D'Lo. D'Lo is more of like the DeAndre Jordan type thing for them to keep Towns happy, and they're cool, but like he's should not be considered part of the core. Rubio's out. Prince, obviously, no. Nas Reed, no. You just go up and down the list. Herman Gomez, no. But Culver, unfortunately, no. So like when you think about who the right mixture of talent around pieces like Edwards and Towns, because I think they're really unique and perhaps maybe a little bit more difficult to build around. What are you looking for? Like, who are you looking as the right guy next to Towns in the front court? Who is the right kind of wing next to Edwards on the perimeter? And like, who do you have in mind, and what kind of, when I say who, what kind of player do you have in mind as a,
So I'll push back a little bit and say that I think Nas Reed is definitely part of that core that they should try and keep around, considering that he's super cheap, as a contract. And really has grown a ton on the offensive end of the floor since he's been in Minnesota. And has really been a key piece of that bench unit that sticks around. Like, yeah, I get what you mean in the sense that like you're probably not going to play him a bunch with Edwards in Towns. But definitely I think he's a guy you want to keep on your team. And the same goes for Jaden McDaniels. Like, I think Jaden McDaniels is a perfect fit on the wing, alongside Anthony Edwards.
And I should mention Malik Beasley too.
Yeah. I personally think that Malik Beasley is not a fit, really. Hmm. He's one of the 10 best shooters in the NBA, but the problem with him is he's so bad defensively. He probably lost the Timberwolves 3 or 4 games in the last 2 minutes of the game this year solely because of lapses in judgment and poor defensive awareness in the clutch. I think that you can try and find guys that can replicate what he does from a shooting perspective without paying them $15 a year. And D'Angelo Russell, I think D'Angelo Russell as a player is a really good fit next to Towns and Russell, because D'Lo is really an exceptional off-ball player in terms of moving without the ball, hunting open space and shooting off the catch. He's phenomenal. And as we all know, he's a terrific pick-and-roll playmaker. And a very good shooter off the dribble, whether it be step backs or pull-ups into the mid-range. So I think as a player, he makes a ton of sense around Edwards and Towns, but his salary figure is just so high that it makes it tough to justify keeping him around if you can use that salary to acquire a much better player like a Ben Simmons. And if you could trade, a guy like D'Lo who's overpaid and a guy who probably doesn't really fit because of his off-court issues and because of his defensive, shortcomings, and Malik Beasley, you can trade both of those guys and potentially get a guy like Ben Simmons. I think it's something that you think about. But in terms of a guy that fits Towns and Russell in the front court, I think you want a guy that can really protect the rim. because I think if you can get Towns and McDaniels making plays out in space and switching, and then have a guy that's home to protect the rim, I think that would be great, because Towns has really struggled to defend as the big and in drop coverage. I think drop is a great scheme for some guys like Gobert, you know, who are naturally really great rim protectors. But it's not as great for guys who would rather be quick decision makers in defending in space. So getting a guy that can play in the drop would be great. Or the Timberwolves should just consider going five out defensively and switching everything, because Towns is athletic enough to do that. So I'd say, you know, at the one, you'd want a guy that can really shoot and play on or off the ball. And so I think D'Lo is really a great fit there. And then the only thing that you're really missing in terms of the Timberwolves core in terms of fit is a guy that can really protect the rim and would allow Kat to be more comfortable on the defensive end of the floor.
Is it over for Jarrett Culver? Is he out of the plans? Is there any way?
I think so, because, you know, Jarrett Culver seems like the perfect guy that would play at Summer League, you know, as a third year guy, who's really just struggled with confidence and injuries. I think he makes a lot of sense to go play in Summer League, but he's not on the Summer League roster. And the reason for that is because I think the team expects to trade him at some point before Summer League kicks off here in the next 48 to 72 hours.
Interesting. I would be curious to see what his trade value is still at this point. The last thing we'll wrap up here. Edwards, like, when you, having watched every game down the stretch from him and also in the beginning, like, what flipped for people that were not able to see anything outside of his drastic jump in 3-point percentage, but also just the dunks and dude's got hops, but like, what changed with him and what gives you real hope that he can be a real, real game changer and a real crazy, scary perimeter threat for years to come?
Yeah. So I think context matters a ton with Anthony Edwards. So Anthony Edwards got basically no training camp because of COVID, limited preseason run. And then he's playing with D'Angelo Russell, Karl-Anthony Towns, Malik Beasley for the first game and a half before Karl-Anthony Towns gets hurt in the second game of the season. And then the big man he's playing with is Ed Davis after that. And when that's the case, you have a guy who's just posted up in the paint, and Edwards is a guy who really, you know, early on needed spacing to get acclimated to the NBA. Because such a huge part of the allure with him was his ability to just terrorize defenders and the rim, you know, when he's got space to work with. And so, you know, once Ryan Saunders got fired in a very vanilla milquetoast offense, was kind of thrown by the wayside in favor of an offense that featured much more ball screens, you know, just more creative sets and ways to get Anthony Edwards the ball going downhill under Chris Finch. And then, you know, you enter Towns back into the fold, who's, you know, arguably the greatest floor spacing big of all time, you know, to go set screens for him and pass with him in high-low action. So I think it was really just the, you know, the combination of that added spacing that Towns provides and, you know, ways that he occupies the defense, and then having a coach that knows creative ways of getting him the ball. So that combination was great. And then just the, you know, natural kind of comfortability process that you get in the NBA with guys that just kind of start to know what it takes to be successful. I think Anthony Edwards realized that, that getting downhill was really the most successful avenue for him to score the ball. And so he really just had a much different mindset the second half of the year of, I'm stronger than you, I'm faster than you, and you're not going to stop me. And having that security blanket of a really smart coach and another star player, I think made all the difference in the world for him. So, you know, just thinking about the fact that the Timberwolves' main core this season of Malik Beasley, Karl-Anthony Towns, and D'Angelo Russell played in two games together this year, and that was the first two games of the season. They didn't play, the four of them were not all active in the same game for the rest of the season between, you know, Kat's wrist injury, Kat getting COVID, D'Lo requiring knee surgery, Malik Beasley having a really bad hamstring strain that kept him out for the latter, you know, 23, 24 games of the season. So, So just keeping in mind that context, and then seeing how he was able to grow, mature on the floor, and just get better through a coach firing and guys being in and out of the lineup, you know, is pretty damn impressive.
All right. Well, I am excited to see what happens because he's fun, and I like Karl Anthony Towns, and I like watching Anthony Edwards. And also the lasting memory of the Wolves this past season was the Hawks beating them by like 75 points. That is my last memory on the road.
Was that on MLK Day?
Yes, I believe. I believe so, because I have never heard Dominique so bewildered at a team's play than that Minnesota team. This was before Saunders got let go, and it was one of the worst basketball teams I've ever seen in my life. Like, what the Hawks were doing, like, the Wolves were just not trying. Like, it was unreal what D'Lo was doing. Like, D'Lo, I think I wrote up for that game. I was like, I don't understand how he is an NBA player anymore. Like, I've never seen anyone just be less engaged and take terrible shots and just do all the worst things a basketball player can do in the NBA. He was doing in that game.
Yeah, I think that he the relationship between he and Ryan Saunders had run its course, and I think that D'Lo was really looking for a change of coach, and you know he was much more engaged under Chris Finch, and was used in a really kind of versatile array of ways where you know he's getting the ball on pin downs coming off those to get catch and shoot threes, but he's also in high low action and slipping as a screener to get to the rim. Something that you saw a lot in horn sets where they used D'Lo as a screener where he could then either pop out and catch and shoot or receive handoffs and make plays from there. So, you know, it's crazy how much better really good offensive players can be when they're engaged and they have a really smart coach to kind of help them along the way.
Yeah. Well, Jack, what can we check out from you across Canis Hoopus or wherever else this week?
Yeah. So, you know, this week, hopefully the Timberwolves will make some type of trade and some type of move to push some of their chips into the middle. And if that happens, then you can expect that I'll have a write-up of that at canishoopus.com. But otherwise, you know, we're just going through and reviewing some of the seasons of individual Timberwolves. And so we've been kind of starting with the role players and working our way up to some of the more high impact guys. And so the plan is to get either Josh Okogie or Jaden McDaniels player review up here in the next week or so over at canishoopus.com.
All right. Well, keep up the great work, sir. Thank you so much for making the time tonight. I greatly appreciate it.
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun, man. I enjoyed it.
All right, hello and welcome back to a Tuesday edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am now joined by Tom Dienhart of goldandblack.com, where he covers the Purdue Boilermakers. Tom, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Doing great. I'm just glad the season is at our doorstep and we're getting ready to play some football.
What is different now versus this time last year, outside of the obvious? Does it feel like normal? Is it feel like we're back into the swing of things covering Purdue football right now?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so far we'll see what all the media access is like. We're going to still have to do Zoom throughout the season with this surge, the COVID-19 virus. You know, there's still that hesitancy sort of hanging over the season, I guess. There's not all these rosters going to have vaccinated players, so who knows if an outbreak takes place that could maybe still compromise roster, cause somebody to miss a game. So while for myself, there's a lot of excitement, there's still that specter that sort of looms out there that something could happen maybe that upset the apple cart.
So it's Zoom all season. That's already been announced. It's not going to fluctuate based on the numbers.
Well, Purdue hasn't made an announcement yet as far as if they're going to have face-to-face interviews with players and media or whatnot. So I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get there, which should be soon.
Well, how has that changed over the last year of covering this team and covering collegiate sports, high school kids, committing to Purdue, talking with Purdue? How has that changed everything in the last year and a half?
As far as the virus goes, I mean, you know, you just have to do more things virtually. That's been the biggest change is not being in front of people, and you know, that can really impact the interview process. So, just not as intimate as a event, I guess, when you're talking to somebody virtually. So I think everybody would like to get back to some sense of normalcy when it comes to those type of activities.
Something that I think about a lot, and this is something that I wonder if Purdue fans and maybe even you and media members are wondering about with just the direction of the program under Jeff Brohm, but like when you think about where Strickland is now, I mean Satterfield, excuse me, at Louisville, and just the natural allure of Louisville for Brohm being his alma mater and all that kind of stuff, but him sticking with Purdue, is there some part, do you think, with Brohm that wonders whether or not he should have more seriously considered it, just as to where Purdue is and just how much better the Big Ten has gotten as a whole? Or what do you make of Brohm at this point in his tenure at Purdue, and do you think that is something he is thinking about?
I mean, I can't even speculate on that.
Yeah.
But Purdue made him an offer he couldn't refuse, honestly. I mean, yeah, there always is that appeal of wanting to go home. That's where his mother and father live. Obviously, he grew up there, and his brothers did. They all were Louisville football players, and Jeff coached there as well. I mean, there's a lot of boxes that get checked when a guy like, you know, Brohm looks like, you know, considers going back to his alma mater. But, well, again, there's that appeal there. Again, Purdue really made him, like I said, an offer he couldn't refuse. He's well paid at the $5 million a year range. And he's got the resources that he needs to succeed at Purdue as well. So it hasn't been smooth sailing the last 2 years. There's no way around that. But I think the program has a chance to turn the corner this year. He's not on a hot seat by any stretch of the imagination, but I think fans would like to see this program get at least back to a bowl 6-6 type season, 7-5. I think that's possible. And again, I can't imagine he regrets too much his decision to stay at Purdue.
It's interesting. So when you mentioned the resources, that he does have the resources to succeed, has he changed anything on that front? And then on the fan front, the expectations, just getting to a bowl, 7-8 wins, does that seem reasonable when you look at this schedule this fall?
I think when I look at the schedule, I think 6-6, 7-5 may be the ceiling for this team. Phil Steele thinks Purdue's got the toughest schedule in America, so they've got to deal with that. You got Notre Dame, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Iowa. There's a lot of heavy lifting on the schedule for Purdue, so the challengers are there. But again, when you look at the schedule, you start trying to figure out, well, win-loss, you kind of always play that game with every schedule, which game you can win and lose. And I think if you run your finger down that schedule, you could find 6 wins, maybe 7. I think anything beyond that would be certainly a bonus. And so we'll see. Like I said, things got to click right for Purdue. They made a lot of changes in the off season. And again, I know Mike Babinski, the AD, has given Jeff everything he needs to succeed. It's just a matter of having it all clicked together here. And they hope some of the changes they made in the offseason, you know, help the program turn a corner and, like I said, get back to a bowl for the first time since that 2018 season.
When you look at the loss of Rondale Moore, is it Bell? Is it just Jack Plummer? Who on this offense do you think has a big leap, takes a big jump this year under Brohm?
Yeah, David Bell's got to be the star, the alpha of the offense. He'll be one of the better receivers, not just in the Big Ten, but maybe in America. I think the big key offensively would be that, just the offensive line, honestly. That's a group that's got to come together. They're never going to rush for 300 yards a game, but they just need better balance, better run-pass balance. And in particular, they need to be more physical. Purdue always struggles when they have to get that tough yard or two. Third and short, fourth and short, or if they're in the red zone, they got to pick up a tough yard near the goal line. That's one area they have to improve at as well. So, again, the line, I think, overall is going to dictate this season, because I think the skill position talent at Purdue is a cut above the receivers, the tight ends. I think whoever wins the quarterback job
will be just fine. Aiden O'Connell or Jack Plummer. And the running backs are serviceable as well. So, again, it's all going to, I think, fall back on that line. And what's interesting there is Jeff Blom now has two line coaches. Two of his 10 full-time coaches are devoted to the offensive line. They don't have a tight ends coach. They promoted a senior analyst to assistant offensive line coach. Neil Calloway is his name, and they still have Dale Williams as the offensive line coach. So they've got a lot of resources invested in making this line better.
So when you look at this line, in particular, a lot of sophomores, do you think it is experienced enough to really keep whoever it is, O'Connell or Plummer? And also, just like you said, the running game, being able to get those tough yards with whether it's Xander Horvath, Jaquiz Cross, like it, whoever it is, do you think it's in a position where they can do that?
I think they have a chance. There's not a lot of quality or experience depth, so they're going to have to stay healthy, I think. But I think they could put out a pretty good first five guys there. The tackle spots are, I think, the ones to me that are maybe most worrisome. I think the interior has a chance to be good. So, you know, like a lot of teams like Purdue, just the depth is where you see the big difference between the elite teams and the teams in the middle of the pack. And, you know, Purdue, when you get down to the second and third team, you know, typically that's when you're taking some gambles on guys who haven't played a lot. So, again, really to get the most success, they're going to have to hope that line, I think, for the most part, can stay healthy.
Can David Bell be just as explosive in this offense as Rondale Moore? What are the subtle differences? What makes Bell a different kind of playmaker for the Boilermakers?
He's not as explosive as Rondale Moore, but boy, he catches every ball that's thrown his way. He's tough and makes clutch catches too. He's going to be a focal point of defenses this year, but you know, Rondale Moore only played a total of 7 games the last 2 years, so it's not like Bell was out there a lot with Moore. He was still the focus of defenses most of the time the last 2 years, and David Bell still excelled. If defenses want to focus on Bell, you know, they've got other wideouts like Milton Wright, T.J. Sheffield. They've got a transfer from Marshall named Brock Thompson, who I think is going to be good. They've got two capable tight ends, Payne Durham and Garrett Miller. So, yeah, Bell's going to get a lot of attention, but Purdue's got plenty of other weapons, I think, that they can exploit. Defenses want to pay a lot of attention to Bell.
On defense, who stands out to you most right now?
It's George Karloftis, without a doubt, the junior defensive end, a local kid. If you look at some early mock drafts for 2022, most of them have Karloftis as a first-round pick. This could be his last year on campus if he's as good as everybody thinks. And, again, he's going to be the star on that side of the ball. And, again, at the defense, with an entirely new coaching staff and a new scheme and 6 transfers as well. So he's one sure thing and one veteran that I know the team can really count on that side of the ball.
When you're looking at, when you're taking note of just the spring practices, spring game, summer practices, people getting ready for training camp, this, that, and the other, who would you say right now on the roster has risen the most, and who has kind of fallen off a little bit from their spring and summers?
I think one of the surprises this spring was one of the transfers, a linebacker from Auburn named O.C. Brothers, who Jeff Blom talked about often in the spring, really came in and turned some heads. He's going to really inject some athletic ability to that defense. And he's a guy I think could end up working his way in the starting lineup and maybe being the team's best linebacker when it's all said and done. So it's going to be exciting to watch him. I think the defensive tackle spot's a concern at Purdue. One of their better tackles is hurt. He's not going to be able to start the year because of a foot injury. They got a couple of transfer tackles. We're counting on that, some depth inside. But they have to get a push on the interior and be good against the run there on the inside. And, you know, offensively, again, I talked about the line, and the one thing Purdue has to do overall, I think, is just be able to throw that football down the field. For as much talk as there has been about making the ground game better, you know, this is always going to be an offense built around the vertical pass game with Jeff Brohm, and they need big plays down the field in the pass game. And that's probably going to really tell the tale of the season. As much as that running game is, their ability to stretch defenses out, throw the ball deep, make big plays. If they can do that, I said the offense should be pretty good.
How much does Tom Allen's success at Indiana of late affect Purdue and how Purdue's thinking is going into each season?
Well, you always keep your eye on your rival, and Indiana's playing awfully well. A lot of momentum. Going to be a preseason top 20, top 15 team. And, yeah, you know, you never like seeing your rival do good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Purdue's still even with the success Indiana's had, the recruiting for Purdue this year has still been pretty solid. So they haven't really fallen off. And kept pretty close pace to IU. So, yeah, you always got your eye on your rival. And you want to do good. So, yeah, you know, Purdue's got its work cut out for them to keep up with IU and what Tom Allen's got going on down there in Bloomington.
Who starts the most games under center for Purdue this fall? Who do you think it is?
I still think it's Aiden O'Connell.
Okay.
You know, he won the job last year in camp over Plummer. There's not a big difference between the two quarterbacks. The one thing Plummer does a little bit better is throw the football down the field. And I think, again, like I said moments ago, that's key to this offense. And he runs good enough to extend plays with his speed if he has to. He's a leader. He's well-liked. And I think in the end, he's the guy who wins the job. And Purdue may play two quarterbacks early on in the year, but I still think he takes the first snap of the year on September 4th when they start the year at home against Oregon State.
Final question, we'll wrap up here. When you look at the schedule, feel still having this being the toughest schedule, I would still probably say it's Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech still stands out to me most. It's like, oh my goodness. I don't know how you get more than three wins on the schedule. But when you look at the schedule, you look at the like just even weird things like going on the road at UConn. What are your expectations? If you had to peg a number, it is what, August 3rd? If you had to peg a final guess as to what Purdue does this fall, what would you guess?
Record-wise, I think 6-6.
Okay.
To me, I mean, you always want to start quickly. I mean, that goes without saying. Everybody wants a quick start to your year. But, man, for Purdue, it's imperative. You look at the first, what is it, five games of the year. Purdue has a chance to start 4-1. They start 4-1, I think, bowl game for sure. If they're 3-2 or anything worse than 3-2, things get a little dicey. That home opener against Oregon State is a monumental game. That's a game Purdue's got to win. Then you go to Connecticut. You got to win at Connecticut. They're horrible. Then you go to Notre Dame. So you got to be 2-1. And then you open the Big Ten season with two home games. You got Illinois and Minnesota, right? And no offense to Illinois and Minnesota. I'm sure they think they can beat Purdue, but Purdue thinks they can beat them. And those are kind of your peer programs. And Purdue's got to find a way to win those games at home because you look at the last seven games, that's when things get dicey. So if Purdue can get off to a good start, like I said, 4-1, at least 3-2, you know, I think there's a really good chance you'll see him in some type of bowl game at the end of the season.
Interesting. Tom, what can we check out from you across Rivals and the Black and Gold and everything? What can we check out from you?
Just previewing the season and a lot of different ways through feature stories and statistics, talking to the, I got a story on the with the AD coming up. And, practice starts August 6th, so they'll be rolling here, and we always have wall-to-wall coverage.
Yeah. And Bobinski is the one who came from Tech, right? Am I misremembering that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep, Mike Bobinski was at Georgia Tech. Yep.
Awesome, awesome. Small world. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much for making the time this afternoon. I greatly appreciate it. Good luck this season, sir.
You got it, sir. Thank you, buddy.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.